Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
What's going on, everybody? Happy December 26th, this Thursday at the Treasure Chess Casino inside the Game Bar and Grill. Steve Geller along with Mike D'Atelier bringing it to 7 o'clock, and then we got some choices for you. 7 p.m. on 870 a.m., a tip-off between the Pelicans and Houston Rockets. Pre-game coverage starts 6:30 there. Meanwhile, 105.3 FM and the Odyssey app at 7. Seattle at Chicago, Thursday night football action. And I don't know if Amazon's too happy tonight about that matchup they have.
Oh, yow. You didn't get two good games yesterday either for Netflix. Ooh-wee.
No, right.
Those were kind of snoring games. You know, you watch a little bit of it, and then you might take your little nap.
Right.
Unless you got coin on it, that keep you up a little bit. But
Houston pulled the Saints almost.
Pretty close. Now, tonight, I think it'll be a little closer game. I like Seattle tonight over the Bears. It means more to Seattle.
Right,
at this
exactly.
stage, Chicago's like bailing water. Man, that was a team that a lot of people thought could possibly be a contender in the playoffs.
For sure.
For a playoff spot. Not in that division. They're the only team in that division that's not in the think. You know, we may look at this in a couple of weeks, and you may have three teams with 12 wins out of one conference.
Right. It's like,
one
what?
Deal. It's like, what? Out of the NFC North? My goodness. Chicago's really suffering right now, and they'll be looking for a new coach. And find it funny, it sort of got leaked to Adam Schefter over the weekend, and he puts out Pete Carroll looking to get back into pro football. Mm. And I knew that Pete eventually, he wants to coach again. If it was at the collegiate level or at the professional level, if you'd asked me a month ago, I'd have said, I thought Pete Carroll gets into it before Belichick, but that wasn't the case.
Right.
But, you know, Pete's had a lot of experience at the collegiate level, a lot of wins at USC, a lot of success there, man, and seeing how that program was built. And I remember going to see Coach O out there, and they had Ed was the defensive line coach, recruiting coordinator. Sarkisian was the quarterback's coach. Lane Kiffin, coach, wide receivers. It was, man, like a who's who.
Yeah.
You know, Norm Chow was the offensive coordinator there. And, man, it was unbelievable to watch that that team. And, boy, were they good at that time. And they knew name, image, likeness long before, you know, it was legal. But whatever. Pete knew how to play that game pretty well. But they won. They won big. And, man, USC, those top players from California, they didn't leave the state. They were headed to USC.
like you mentioned, week 17 of the NFL season started last night with the Christmas games on Netflix. Today we've got Thursday night football, Seattle and Chicago. Sunday, Saints football. Actually, there's Saturday football, too. I completely glossed over that. But Sunday, we got the Saints, who are in action at home in the finale, the regular season finale at home. They'll be likely without their center and Eric McCoy, who didn't practice again today. That's not good news for them. It's an elbow issue. Coach Rizzi did say at least it's not something that's going to require surgery.
Yeah, and so you can expect Shane Lemieux is going to play center.
Right.
And most likely Landon Young is going to be the left guard
because
of Lucas Patrick. And so now you got two new pieces to the puzzle. And we'll see what happens at the quarterback slot. The fact that Derek did not practice today is sort of telling a little bit. And if he was playing or not playing, I would never tell the media anything about it if I was the coach. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But Spencer Rattler is going to get the nod if Derek can't go. Now, we heard Coach Rizzi say last week, if Derek Carr's healthy, he's starting.
Right.
And he basically telling you, hey, he's going to start. But again, the big question mark is, how functional is he with that injury? And it's not about the concussion now. It is about the hand injury.
Before we get more into the injury report, Mike, wanted to let everyone know, Charlie let me know from the studio that we've got a phone call saying that fog is getting very bad on the south end of the causeway. So you may they may continue to use restrictions there. Stay posted to WWL. We'll have more updates throughout the show and obviously in our news updates. Back with the Saints injury report, though, getting into another guy that did not practice today, Alvin Kamara, dealing with a groin issue. He's definitely a huge question mark, not just for Sunday, but the rest of the season.
Yeah, and so again, you know, we thought last week, you know, it was a great opportunity for Kendra Miller. What happens? You know, he's watching the game most of it. He ain't playing. Mims got more snaps in. So, hey, listen, you're not going to get all these opportunities in life. You got to take hold of it when it happens. And I know the game got out of hand quickly, but still, if you look at those totals, I mean, he didn't do anything running the ball, but they got beat up front. The offensive line got really beat up against a really good Packers defensive front. And so, again, it gives an opportunity here for Kendra Miller, and we know he's talented. Does he want to give you what he's got? And it's not about most of the time what he can give you on Sunday. It's preparation. Getting himself mentally and physically ready to play an NFL, not just a game, a series of games, which we haven't seen him being able to piece that together.
No, it's been a big disappointment from him. And, yeah, I thought it would be somewhat of a coming out for him. You wanted to show something against the Packers.
Didn't show nothing.
No, nobody was able to do anything, though.
No, it's just a total dominate. The score was no indication of how bad the game got out of hand. The Packers really literally could have scored any time they had the ball. I mean, that's how dominant their offense was. And defensively, boy, they got after you. And once they knew you weren't going to run the ball, that was it. And when we come back from on the second segment, I'll talk a little bit about how. And it was so funny. I heard this at Louisiana line camp in the summer. And, you know, most of the guys there, a lot of defensive coaches from the NFL. We actually had nine defensive coaches in the NFL that were there at Louisiana line camp. They had three on the offensive side, but nine on defense. And all of them were saying, hey, guys, we better change up. You know why? While we're getting smaller, they're going to start running the football. And I'll give you some stats to show that that's exactly what is happening this year in the National Football League. Teams are running the football more than we've seen it over the last few years and trying to be physical, control the football, and not putting everything in the basket of a quarterback to make play after play after play.
Rounding out the Saints injury report was Juwan Johnson, Nathan Shepard, Peyton Turner, and Marquez Valdez-Scantling, all limited at practice. Positive, though, Chris Olave, a full go as he comes back from the concussion protocol. We shall see if he'll be in action for the games this year.
This late in the year, I wouldn't play him.
Maybe get him out there for a few snaps to get some confidence.
Not me. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. My thing is, hey, listen, you get better. You not playing at this point for a championship or anything else.
Right.
We want you healthy for 2025. And I get it with Coach Rizzi. Come on, you know, if he can help me win, then, you know, again, it's I think it would be a major, major long shot for him to get the head coaching job full time. Right. But, you know, I understand kind of both sides of it here. But with Olave, I would certainly look at him to for the next two games. He won't be playing.
The only thing I could see, I totally would understand shutting him down and, you know, thinking about next season. But I just wonder if you want to get him out there at all just to get some confidence of getting hit again and, you know, getting back into the flow of live game action.
He knows how to play football.
Yeah, I know.
He knows how to play football. I keep him out, Steve. I get it, but my thing is I want him healthy for 2025. It gives him a long time for, you know, that head issue to recover, and there's no Band-Aid to put on that head. You know,
right,
you
yeah.
get a head issue, and as, you know, he kind of got back-to-back sort of shots there. You got to take it very, very, especially in today's world, you got to be careful with it.
I imagine we would see him in the game if he does play this year with a guardian cap. It just seemed to make sense for him. I know he was practicing one for a little bit this year, but he ended up, you know, transitioning to that into game time for whatever reason.
And the hell how it looks. You know, you got to protect yourself. Yeah. You know, a lot of guys for years.
It's hard to tell now even. I've seen a few with the
it kind of built in sort of situation.
The skin over it.
But, you know, I talked to Schlerf about this. For a lot of years, guys didn't want to play with a knee brace. You know, man, what? I'm going to look like I'm soft if I'm playing with a knee brace. What? If that can help me prolong my career, I'm going to play with it. Now, today, I mean, it's a non-issue if you play with a knee brace or not, you know. But I think maybe years ago, because we don't have social media back then like they do today, but it was, you're a soft player playing with a knee brace. What? No, I'm trying to protect myself so I can continue my career. Hebert got the best line about it. The real world sucks. And we found out today, Teddy Bridgewater found out real quick. Okay, yeah, you can go coach somewhere. That's fine. But, man, I want to get that NFL money. That's where I can really make it. You're never going to make that kind of cash again.
We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Coming up this hour, we'll be talking to Chrissy Smith, a podcaster and writer for TheNode.com, getting a little insight on this Pelicans matchup against the Houston Rockets tonight, and also all those trade rumors swirling around the Pellies. 5 o'clock hour, Chrissy Freud, college football and NFL writer for USA Today, will join us. 6 o'clock hour, all NFL. Hondo Carpenter covers the Raiders for Sports Illustrated, and also our Saints sideline reporter, Jeff Nowak, and digital content producer for WWL will give us an update from Saints practice today. Taking a break here on WWL. Be back with more right after this here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Stay tuned. We are back here on Sports Talk at the Treasure Chest Casino as we count down to Thursday Night Football coming up on 105.3 FM between Seattle and the Bears, and then also on 105.3 FM. That's on 105.3 FM, 870 AM. Pelicans taking on the Rockets. Pre-game coverage starts 6:30 there. And then tomorrow, Pelly's got another one back-to-back at home, taking on the Memphis Grizzlies. Same tip-off time, 7 p.m. You can catch all the action. Pelicans on 870 a.m. Mike, there was something you were talking about you wanted to get into as we were getting into the break just a moment ago.
Yeah, we were talking about running the football more in the NFL, and I got kind of tipped off a little bit by it. When you go to Louisiana Line Camp, there's a lot of the NFL coaches there, and they had a feeling that the offenses, because they had been in those meetings and they knew what their teams were doing, so they figured it was league-wide. Yeah. You know, and last year there was not a running back in the NFL that carried the football 300 times as a rusher. Derrick Henry had 280, Christian McCaffrey 272, Rashad White, and think about that, last year he carried about 272 times for the Bucs. And then Travis Etienne, Louisiana guy, Jacksonville Jaguars, 267. This year, already with games left to play, you got three running backs that have carried the football over 300 times. Saquon Barkley, 314. Derrick Henry, 305. Kyron Williams, 303 with the Rams. And there's four other guys that are in kind of shouting distance of the 300 mark, and that would be Josh Jacobs, who we got to see Monday night, 278. Bijan Robinson with Atlanta, 259. Najee Harris with the Steelers. He may get the 300. He got 251 right now with a couple games. And then Chuba Hubbard with the Panthers, 250. So you might have 6 to 7 guys that rushed the ball 300 times or more. Last year you didn't have a one Not one.
Yeah, people were quick to write off the running back last year.
And you look at the success of what Derek has done to the offense with the Ravens, what Josh has done. And, you know, Aaron Jones is a good back. And, you know, he goes to Minnesota. But, you know, they got a better player in Josh Jacobs. And what he was able to do, and certainly Saquon. And I told you, man, I was a Saquon Barkley fan coming out of Penn State. Just got saddled with a bad team, and then he gets beat up in New York. And then you would figure, you know, they let him go, and he goes sign with the Eagles. And wild. He is certainly, man, offensively, he's carted them on his back. And I know they got terrific receivers, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, you know, and Dallas Goedert at tight end, and what Hurts does at quarterback. But really, that offense revolves around Saquon Barkley. On the flip of that, think of last year in receptions. CeeDee Lamb had 135 last year, which that's a big number. Tyreek Hill, 119. Amon-Ra St. Brown, he had 119. Evan Ingram, now if we was on Football Jeopardy, most people wouldn't have got the fourth one. He got 114 with the Jaguars. Michael Pittman Jr., he got 109 with the Colts. And then Keenan Allen got 108 with the L.A. Chargers. This year, Ja'Marr Chase leads everybody with 108.
Yep.
You know, he ain't getting the 135.
No.
And then you think Brock Bowers at 101 along with CeeDee Lamb.
We'll be seeing
and the
him.
Saints are going to see Brock Bowers. And, you know, that was an easy call on him, how good of a player he was at Georgia. And they just feed him the ball, certainly with the Raiders. And then Amon-Ra St. Brown again. He's got over 100. He's got 101. Malik Nabers is 97. So I would figure, you know, he's going to get over the 100. Mark Travis Kelsey's 97, too. Him and Malik both have 97. And then Jackson Smith and Najobo, he's got 93. Justin Jefferson's got 92. And Trey McBride has 92. But think about Trey. He's got 92 catches and not a one touchdown catch.
How does that
He's
happen,
got a touchdown
right?
run, but, okay. but no touchdown no reception. So look at the numbers, and you can see how this league has pivoted a little bit, and it's much more now than, say, a year ago toward the running game. The other thing that jumps out at me, Brock Bowers, with 101 catches, he eclipsed last year's mark with Sam Laporta, who set it at 86. Hmm. The most catches by a rookie tight end. Bowers got 101. Keith Jackson, who you knew about when he was with the Eagles, he got 81. Jeremy Shockey, that first year, 2002 with the New York Giants, he got 74. Dalton Kincaid in that special year of 2023 of tight ends, he got 73. And the only year he's really put up big numbers as a rookie, Kyle Pitts, 68 in 2021. You're seeing the big impact, too, at tight end. And rookie tight end saying, okay, just throw me the ball. I got it.
Yeah.
You see it with Bowers. You saw it last year with Laporta. Dalton Kincaid, he's had a few injuries this year. But, man, he's a terrific football player. We all saw the impact of Shockey, not only with the Giants, but then when the Saints got him from New York and what he had for that Super Bowl run here with the Saints. And, man, Keith Jackson, he's a man out on that field for the Eagles. Now, he didn't catch a ton of passes at Oklahoma. They weren't known for throwing the football back then. They were a run-oriented team. But you see now what's happening on the other end. And I think this will be a really good year for tight ends coming out. They may have somebody eclipse Brock Bowers' record next year. It is a quarterback-friendly spot where I'm looking for a hot guy quickly. It's the tight end. And that's why I think you've seen what Bowers and Laporta have been able to bring to the table, and certainly Dalton Kincaid, too, with the Bills.
You mentioned that list of the leading receivers, and what stood out to me is obviously Bowers, but also on the list, Nabers, two rookies doing their thing, and Nabers, man, getting it done in New York with
lousy
no quarterback play.
That's
right.
Bad. And now, I will say this. Bowers, he's not looking like an all-star team of quarterbacks. What he got, he had
True.
Uncle Rico for a while, and then Uncle Rico gets hurt. Then he has O'Connell throwing him the football, and then Desmond Ritter.
Right? Yeah, and now it's back to O'Connell.
Okay. So just think about that. I mean, he's not playing with an all-star team. You went from Jaden Daniels to Aiden O'Connell and Desmond Ritter. That ain't really good. And you could tell, I mean, you can see the body language with Malik and hear it in his voice. Man, what have I gotten into? My thing, I'd tell him, hey, Malik, guess what? I know you got paid at LSU, but you're getting paid a lot of money now in the NFL.
For sure. We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back from the break, we'll be joined by Chrissy Smith, podcaster and writer at TheKnow.com, getting all the action and breaking it down for Pelicans at Houston, taking on the Houston Rockets in the Smoothie King Center tonight. 6:30 pregame coverage, 7 o'clock tip-off over on 870 AM. We'll be back with more at the Treasure Chest Casino. Join us for Sports Talk. We're here till 7 on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk at the Treasure Chest Casino. Steve Geller along with Mike Dettelier. Happy to welcome in now Chrissy Smith, podcaster and writer for TheKnow.com. Chrissy, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are y'all? Good to talk to you.
Chrissy, great to have you on. Man, it was heartbreak to see it because Pelicans had that game against the Nuggets. It slips away in overtime. The one bright spot certainly come out of there is Jordan Hawkins. And I think in this year, you're kind of looking for a bright spot here or there. You're not getting it consistent with Jordan, but, man, for him to get 25 points in that game, that certainly was big for Jordan. And, you know, I know one thing he can shoot. Now, I wish he'd play a little better defense, but I do know one thing. He can put the ball in that round circle pretty well. So coming out of that game, it gave you a little bit of hope that this young man – is developing into a really good shooter in the NBA.
Yeah, and for a second-year player, it's really nice to see him advance and grow the way that he has. He's really developed that three-point shot even more than he did as a rookie last year. So that's been great to see because, obviously, with all the injuries, the Pelicans have needed somebody, multiple people really, to step up and do some things that we weren't expecting to see this season.
Chrissy, I think the other thing, too, is we saw, and it surprised me a little bit. I'd watched him in college in that 1 year at Baylor, but Mise and what he's been able to do with this team, and you see a young man that has just picked up this game so quickly. I remember before the season, this is probably 3 weeks before the season, we had Jen Hale on, and Jen had told me, even before we went on the air, that, Mike, I'm telling you, the Pelicans coaches are saying he's way ahead of what they thought he would be at this stage. Because I thought he would be sort of just a chip player. You know, every once in a while you'll see a few minutes just to kind of, you know, give you a starter, a little bit of a breather. He's done a lot more than that. You think about it against the Nuggets, 21 points, 9 rebounds, 3 block shots. As a former player, you see that, you know, yourself, because you played in the college ranks. But to have that guy come in here, not of a lot of experience, and I don't want to say the NBA's been easy, but it's been easier than I think anyone could have imagined when you watched him in college a year ago.
Yeah, it's been really fun to watch him this season. It's definitely been one of the bright spots that was unexpected. You know, going into the season, it was like, what are we going to do about the center position? And then here you've got this kid coming in that nobody was talking about. No one was saying, oh, we might have a potential rookie of the year candidate playing in New Orleans. I mean, the last time this organization even had that was in 2006 with Chris Paul. And so now you've got somebody that is in the running, and he is so exciting and fun to watch. But the other thing I love about him is that he's hungry. He wants to prove himself out there, and he's taking all the advice, everything he's being given, and he's implementing it every game. And like you said, he's learning so fast. And I think that it's definitely something that's giving some of the other players on the team, you know, something to play for. When you only have 5 wins on the season at this point, it can be a bit discouraging. But they've got this young guy that I think they're all, you know, pulling and rallying around him a bit to try to see what this season could end up being for him.
Chris, the way this season has played out, Steve and I have talked about it, along with Charlie. Somebody eventually is going to become the guy that catches the guillotine, okay, across the neck. And my thing is, if this continues the way it is, I don't see how Willie can get out of January, to be honest with you. And it's not all his fault, but, you know, again, that perception reality part, we win and we finding kind of new ways to lose games that Do you think Willie can survive this to the end of the year? Personally, for me, I don't see how he'll be able to survive this. No matter if you start to get some of the pieces back healthy, you're so far back right now that eventually that finger's going to get pointed toward you, and you're gonna catch the blade.
Well, the thing is, at some point, someone has to be blamed for what's going on, and you're not going to blame the guys that are injured and can't do anything about it. So typically it is going to fall on the head coach at some point. I mean, I personally think the team's playing hard. I think that they're playing for Willie, and they're doing the best they can. But I mean, they're a broken team. You get one guy back and you trade him for somebody else getting injured at this point. So I think Willie's doing a fine job. I'm not going to say, you know, I could see him being coach of the year at some point, but I think he's doing what he can with what he's got. But I do think I can't see him making it out of the season, even January, like you said, because if things don't turn around at some point, I mean, somebody's got to get blamed for what's going on.
The good news is you get DeJounte Murray back, and we see the facilitator of a guy that can get the guy, you know, someone else in play for a really good shot. We saw it against Denver, 17 points, 15 assists, 8 rebounds, and 6 steals. This is why you made the trade to bring him in. You thought he was going to be the guy to be the facilitator between Brandon Ingram and Zion and Trey Murphy and everyone else involved. Now, he gets hurt, you know, real early in the year, but I think you've seen glimpses of why you made that trade. The only problem is you have so many of the other guys that you were hoping he could get the ball to is not on the court.
Yeah, and you got to see it in the first game when you had everybody there except for Trey, and you know, but it was exciting. He was doing what we wanted a point guard to do for this team. And I think we all said, oh man, the potential that we knew was there, we're seeing it happen. And then at the end of the first game, he breaks his hand and you're like, oh brother. And now, you know, he's back, but he does have a lot of missing pieces still. So we haven't seen that full potential, but what we have seen, there's so much good there. If we could just get everyone together on the court at some point, I mean, think about it. Jordan Hawkins wouldn't even be a starter typically, but look how well he's playing. Can you imagine having the starting five with the depth of like Jordan Hawkins coming off the bench while you've got Murray facilitating as a point guard? I mean, there's so much that could be there, and we know that's there, but Murray has also been something really great to watch this season. And he's a great point guard overall.
You mentioned those injuries, and I'm just curious. Obviously, there's hopefully some help on the horizon with Jose Alvarado and Zion Williamson expected to be back in the mix next week. Just this offense has been so lacking, and you hear all these trade rumors, but getting Zion at least back into the mix, I think it's got to be obviously crucial for this team right now, because we're just in a tailspin for this season, and I don't even know where fans are thinking right now about, you know, football season's ending, and is anybody thinking about going to Pelicans
no,
games?
No, people talking to me more about LSU baseball
right
than the Pelicans, but Chrissy, I think they need somebody to put the jumper cables on the battery, and they haven't found that guy yet. And so hopefully if you can get healthy, maybe together they can slap those jumper cables on that battery.
Yeah, well, we know that Jose Alvarado coming back, he's an energy guy. People want to watch him play. Even if you're losing, you want to watch him. The guy's great. But obviously, if you can get Zion back about the same time as Jose, then things suddenly can start to ramp up. Then we can see, you know, we're still going to be missing Ingram, and Trey Murphy is day-to-day right now. But if you can get Zion back on the court and then see what starts happening, like you said, with DeJounte Murray facilitating, and we've got Herb Jones out there, and then we've got everything happening with Missy. And I mean, there's so much potential out there. I do think things could turn around. So I'm hopeful that come January, things start to pick up, the wins start rolling in, and then you're going to be able to, you know, be excited about basketball season in New Orleans again.
Chrissy, one of the things, too, is sometimes you got to make moves and you find out about somebody that I think is better than maybe what you thought when you brought him in. And that would be Brandon Boston. You know, okay, third-year guy from Kentucky. okay, you know, kind of gets cut in one of these little salary cap type situations, and he's open to you, and you're able to bring him in. Brandon's really played some good basketball for the Pelicans. And I guess, you know, you didn't think he'd have this big of a role, but he has been better than I think anyone could have imagined when they signed him.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And he's another guy that I would say is hungry, because right now he's getting minutes because you do have hurt players. And so this is his chance. This could be his last chance to show I deserve time on the court. And so that hunger does fuel you. You know, there's no complacency there. And that's what you're seeing with him. And he's fighting for every loose ball, and he's making good decisions out there. So he's definitely proving himself to be another one of those guys that could be an off the bench. Clearly, we're using him plenty right now as we need him.
Chrissy, appreciate your time. Tell us what you got going on the website, onthenow.com, and the podcast you're putting out there, too.
Yeah, so I'm part of Be in the Know group, and we're just a local group of people who have some background in covering sports and, you know, love our local team. So we just want to highlight it as much as we can. And then I've got a podcast called State of the Pels, and it's just, we try to keep it positive and upbeat, even when we've only got 5 wins. But, you know, it makes the season go by a little bit easier, even when you're struggling.
Chrissy, you got a hell of a job on your hands to try to make it positive, but I get it. You got to do what you got to do, but I understand it. And it's just, think about all the hype before this season and how quickly it all came apart.
There was a ton of hope for sure.
Yeah, because everybody was, man, I can't wait till the Pelicans get on the court. And when the trade came down with Murray, I think that was really the big thing. Man, maybe we got something here that can take us into the playoffs and not be in the play-in tournament. Now, you're basically talking about maybe you a lottery pick team, to be honest with you.
I know. Unfortunately, that is what it's looking like at this point. Unless they do something miraculous, and anything's possible in the NBA, so you never know. But yeah, you know, hopefully good things are headed the Pelicans' way.
Appreciate the time, Chrissy. Everybody check out InTheKnow.com for more of her and everyone's work there. So talk to you soon, Chrissy. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, Chrissy.
Thanks, guys.
That was podcaster and writer for TheKnow.com, Chrissy Smith, joining us there, breaking down the Pelicans. They will play the Houston Rockets tonight in the Smoothie King Center, a 7 o'clock tip-off you can hear on 870 AM. And then the Birds got to turn around. They got a back-to-back at home and get the Memphis Grizzlies there tomorrow.
It don't get any easier. No. Right? Go from the Rockets to the Grizzlies. And, man, the Rockets, you know, you thought before the season, but I told you, you know, 30 games into the season or 30th game, you're 20-9. Man, Houston has really played some good basketball. Really, really has.
Taking a break here on WWL. Be back for more from the Treasure Chest Casino right after this. Stay tuned. We got choices here on WWL tonight. 8:70 a.m. come 6:30 will be pregame coverage of the Pelicans taking on the Houston Rockets. A tip-off at 7 p.m. Once again, that's on 8:70 a.m. Meanwhile, 6:30 over on 105.3. You can stick with us on Sports Talk, and then we'll lead you right up to Thursday night football action as the Seattle Seahawks and Chicago Bears clash in a matchup that wasn't as interesting as maybe they had hoped in the beginning of the year.
No, because you thought, you know, the Bears would be in the hunt for something.
It looked like they'd be.
Early on, maybe you thought that way, but then, you know, Caleb has played like a normal rookie quarterback would play. And his offensive line's not good, but boy, he's holding on to the ball way too long, taking way too many sacks. And at one time, their defense was a strength of the team. I can't say that today.
Taking a break for news. We'll be back with more right after this, so stay tuned on WWL. Welcome on into the 5 o'clock hour here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Treasure Chest Thursday here on WWL. We're at the Game Bar and Grill. You can stop by, me and Mike D'Antilier here till 7 p.m. this evening, getting ready for Pelicans at Rockets on 870 a.m. and then also Thursday Night Football, Seattle at Chicago on 105.3 FM and the Odyssey app. Black and Gold, they're getting ready for a home finale, taking on the Las Vegas Raiders. And the big question mark, well, there's a bunch of question marks. One of the question marks for this Saints team is, will Derek Carr be able to suit up Sunday against his old team? Didn't practice today with that injury to his left non-throwing hand. And I know all the talk has been, will he be able to you know, manipulate a football, throw the ball, be able to withstand a hit, dealing with basically
that's all about function.
Function
as a quarterback. So remains to be seen. And he wasn't ready for last week. And, you know, a lot of times, too, his weather gets involved. Man, you know, you go hot and cold, cold, hot, you know, what how that is. And what that does to certain injuries, especially if it's a back or a muscle. Because you know what? Once you got a back issue, you got that for life.
Right.
It ain't something that you're going to get over right away. And so, you know, if you got a broken bone, is one thing. There's nothing you can really do about it. You have to let it heal. But, man, it's all these. And we talked to Dean Kleinsmith last week about it. And Dean was like, I really can't tell you about a lot of that. You know, a lot of that is also the person himself keeping himself in shape, understanding how his body works. Because if you go to a trainer, you know, if he's training, say, 10 or 12 people, everybody's body is different. They react differently. It might be a food issue. It might be a hydration issue. It might be you got to stretch more. And those are the sort of things you have to know yourself as a professional. Now, everybody gets outside help. They'll get a personal trainer and stuff. But not everybody's body reacts the same. The broken bone's a different issue. But muscle pulls and that, you know, it's the hot pod. You're just basically spinning the wheel on it.
For you, Mike, what do you think we need to see from Carr at practice this week? Obviously, he's going to have to do something, at least be limited tomorrow to have any chance.
Yeah, you got to be able to throw the football accurately, okay? to grip a ball and throw it accurately. That's the thing. You know, years ago, people say, oh, man, Kenny Stabler didn't play all week, didn't practice all week. Yeah, that's true. But Kenny didn't have, well, he had injuries, but it wasn't why he wasn't practicing, so to speak. So those days are gone today. You got to be able to prepare to play. Very few guys can just come in and play with no practice. Alvin Kamara's one of them, though, because, man, Sean Payton told this to Bob and I. I've had very few guys that, you know what, they didn't need to practice. He just could play. And he said Alvin's one of them. Because he understood it at a different level than a lot of people out there. But if you're a quarterback having to handle the ball each and every snap, most of it now is out of the shotgun. So that does help then basically putting your hand under center. Because every time you snap that ball into center, man, it's like you get an electrical shock go through it. So catching it out of the shotgun is much easier today. But still, you got to be functional. And you got to be accurate making those throws.
Alvin Kamara was also someone that didn't practice today, Mike. And a lot of folks making a big deal. He's just 50 yards away from 1,000 yards on the season. And I kind of got mocked from some folks saying, is that even a big deal anymore for me getting 1,000 yards in a year?
Not anymore when you play 17 games.
That's what I'm saying. I'm sure it would be a nice feather in the cap for Alvin. But now, that's really something he desires and wants on his...
You know, now, maybe part of that contract says, if I get to 1,000 yards, I get, you know, I hit a certain...
Right, if it's triggering incentives.
Incentives.
Right.
And so, you know, it's part of your deal. But still, today, you know, growing up when it was like 14 games is one thing. Man, get 1,000 yards. That's a lot of yardage in a 14-game season. Then it went to 16. Now it's 17. Man, 1,000 yards doesn't look like
no,
it
right?
used to look. And today the game has changed so radically in that you see all the touches that Alvin has as a runner. But how important he is as a receiver coming out the backfield. Because you know what? If I've got to set up a game plan – my thought process to stop him in the running game is one thing. Trying to, you know, go one-on-one with him in the passing game is another. I'm spending a lot of time on that, too. And you see his loss dramatically, what it does to this football team. I don't think there's any question about it. The injuries with McCoy and him and Hill have just KO'd this team along with... We didn't even talk about the two starting receivers being out.
Right.
With Olave and Rashid Shaheed. So, man, you got issues. And, again, Superman's not coming save the day.
Yeah, a knock on the guys that are playing, but obviously your main playmakers are not in the game. So, I don't know what anybody was really expecting from this team.
But it solves the idiot comment, next man up.
Ugh.
Okay? And you hear it. I understand the coach saying it. okay? Because he's got to sell that to the locker room.
Sure.
Come on, most coaches will tell you, I don't believe it, but I'll say it. But even worse, they write it. Or they repeat right. it. And so, you know, they get a kick about it too. But it goes to show you there is a reason why that guy's starting and the other guy isn't. That there is a gap there, between talent-wise, between those two individuals, when you can say, oh, don't worry about it, it's next man up. Next man, tell me who the next man is. Then I can tell you if it matters or not. Most of the time, the next man, he's not in the same area code as your starter. You just can't pay for depth anymore. And I think that's what you're seeing in the NFL more and more, Steve, than first when I first started covering it, so basically 40 years. There was a lot more depth on NFL teams than there is today. Now, I think, you know, with the expansion of the league and more players on a roster, the expansion part of it, roster-wise, has kind of put water in the soup. You know, you're diluting the product that at one time was there, and you had quality depth. Today, it's rare that you have those type depth position guys.
Talking about some depth, Mike, we got caller Joe in Bay St. Louis on the line, wants to talk about these injuries with the Saints and Pelicans. Joe, what you got for us today on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line?
Yeah, guys, Mike, I think I don't know if you were preemptively trying to cover the bases there or whatnot. My question is, you were talking about how guys heal and this sort of thing, and I was already thinking about this long before y'all even got into this segment before the news, is that, look, I don't think anybody disagrees that we have quality players, right? We've got quality players on both sides of the ball. The Pelicans have quality players, right? And I think that when you have one week in this season, the Saints had 17 off of the. I mean, and okay, that's bad luck. Okay, that's bad luck. People get hurt. It's bad luck. I get it. It's since Sean left. It's every. What was it? 3 years, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we went through five quarterbacks. We pulled a place kicker off of the street, four or five place kickers. I mean, at some point, somebody has to address the fact that these players are not conditioned well, and we need to start looking at the conditioning staff for these guys, because it's bad luck if it happens 1 year. It's not bad luck. So how many Zion's been with the Pelicans 5 years? I mean, how many games has he completed, start to finish, in 83-game seasons times five?
Joe, I think what you bring up is a good point. I think it's a shared situation. You know, because if you break a bone, there's one thing. There's nothing you can do about that. But the conditioning part has to be a two-headed coin here. It's got to. Most people don't want to blame the athlete. Now, this is one of the times they kind of give the athlete a pass. They want to blame it on the training staff or whatever. I think it's a dual shot here. That okay? Because you can't treat everybody the same. You can't condition them the same way. Everybody's built a little bit different, and I think the technology part of knowing that today is there to help you get that athlete back on the field quicker. But, man, for the Pelicans, it has been year in, year out. And now you see it, you know, with the Saints. But you know what? I did a show out in San Francisco. They're saying the exact same thing with the 49ers. How can we have all these injuries? I'm blaming it on the conditioning staff. I blame it on the trainers. I blame it on the coach. Okay, it's partially both the player individually and also understanding how to get that player to respond, because not everybody's injury is the same. And I think it's basically the two-headed coin here.
We are taking a break here on Sports Talk. You can join us at the Treasure Chest Casino inside the Game Bar and Grill. We'll be here till 7 p.m. Going to take a break. When we get back, get into some college football and NFL talk with Chrissy Freud from USA Today Sports right after this. So stay tuned on WWL. Well, welcome back into Sports Talk. We are now joined by Chrissy Freud. Appreciate the time. She covers the NFL and college football for the USA Today Sports Network. How's it going today, Chrissy?
Good. How are you?
Chrissy, let's get to some of the games that will happen this weekend. And I look at Texas and what they did last week going up against Arizona State. They rushed for 292 yards. Now, we saw you do a lot of study on quarterbacks. I thought that was the best game I've ever seen Kubnik play for Clemson. But when your defense can't stop the run, you got some real difficulties. I think Texas's game plan will be very similar against Arizona State. They want to try to out-physical them, hold on to the football, play a little keep away, and I don't think Arizona State can match what Clemson did throwing the football with Cade. To me, this seems to be, if the focus is there, Texas has got this game.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing whenever we look at these college football playoff matchups in this expanded format is that we're beginning to see, I don't think this is going to be the case year in and year out with this expanded format, but at least for this time, we're seeing a lot of lopsided matchups. We're seeing a lot of teams that can't compete the way that we thought maybe they can compete. And I think that Arizona State's going to be the exact same way. I think Arizona State is absolutely a lesser opponent to Texas. I think that Texas did well in the areas you had mentioned. And I think that Texas is going to outweigh Arizona State in just about every single facet possible this game. And so just the way that you laid it out, I think that's exactly how it's going to happen. And I don't think this is going to be a competitive football game at all. And how, to be honest with ourselves, how many competitive football games at all have we seen in the college football playoff? And Cade Klubnik, as we go back over, I think he had a hard time at the very beginning of the season. But I think as the season continued on, he showed just how good of a quarterback he was. And he was a quarterback that if his team had played complimentary football, deserved to win a football game in that situation.
You look at the Oregon game because of what happened in game one against Ohio State. And Ohio State sort of helped them in that game. Not sort of. I think they did help them in that game. Oregon has played really well. Their offense built on speed. They do run the football well, but they built on these little short passes and getting the track team out into the open field. But if Ohio State shows up like they did last Saturday against Tennessee, I think there's no way Oregon can beat them. Now, again, I don't know if we see that Buckeye team again, because they look like they came in there ready to play. And you saw the talent get unleashed on a pretty good Tennessee team, to be honest with you. And they just beat them from start to finish with this. Your thoughts on this game between the two teams where I think early in the season or even in the offseason, most people thought Ohio State's going to get there. You never thought you'd see Oregon and Ohio State play in the early part of the playoff round.
Yeah, it's been interesting to watch how this whole thing's gone. But I think that the biggest narrative to see in this entire thing is that there is no Alabama's gone. I mean, the college football dynasty team's gone. We don't have that anymore. And Oregon seemed to be on its way up to be that next thing. And then we saw how they came so close to Wisconsin and what happened there. I mean, Wisconsin's not a very good football team. And so matchups like that and several other matchups across the nation that kind of illustrated that same point is that there is no dominant team. And so to me, Ohio State and Oregon is anybody's game, just as any college football playoff game is anybody's game. But I mean, Ohio State at this point definitely has a chip on its shoulder, and Ohio State's a very good football team. So, I mean, I would pick Ohio State to beat Oregon, but I think it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. But at the same time, the Ducks and the way that they've rebuilt is commendable. I mean, Oregon's not consistently for the past 10 years been like one of the best college football teams in the nation, always going to make it to the national championship. And so the way that they reloaded after losing a player like Bo Nix and some of these really big guys that they lost, and being able to transition and to make it into being the number one team in America for a period of time, it's huge. And so I think that this is going to be a close game, but I personally do believe that Ohio State and Will Howard at the helm, how great has this transition been for him, this comes out on top at the end of it.
And boy, when you got Phil Knight cutting checks, it's pretty good, you know. You got a guy, and he's at an age now where he's told everybody, hey, whatever money you need, I want to see a national championship at Oregon in football in my lifetime. And, you know, Phil's kind of getting up in age. Chrissy, before I get into the Georgia-Notre Dame game, this popped in my head because before the draft last year, you were a big advocate of Spencer Rattler. I remember us talking about that with you. And your thoughts on Spencer before the draft and what you've seen so far of him in NFL games.
Yeah, it's funny because him and Jay Kaner are going back and forth right now at that backup position behind Derek Carr. And I think that Spencer's obviously got the edge. I talked to Jay Kaner yesterday and I said, how have things been with the things? And he said, things have been pretty interesting. I get the sense that he's not very happy with the way that things have gone. That's understandably so. But I think that Spencer has the higher ceiling. And I think that he's shown that so far, but I think he's going through these rookie growing pains. And the unfortunate thing is that he's going through these rookie growing pains without being prepared to have to do this whatsoever. So I think Spencer's probably doing a better job than he's being given credit for.
Chrissy, when you look at the Georgia game, it's a new dynamic because the erratic play of Carson Beck this year. And I thought he was one of these guys, having watched him last year, that he would make that leap and he would become that big-time guy. He certainly has got talent. I'm not going to go that far, but it's just his erratic nature. We've seen him look really good in like a half, really bad in a half. Quarters, almost the exact same way. Now you get a new dynamic now with Gunnar Stockton. One thing with Gunnar is people think, you know, he's just some guy that has been sort of in the wings, but you see the talent in him. How he handled that second half going up against Texas, I think you saw some maturity and poise in him, and he brings an element that Carson didn't have. He can run. And it almost was like the batteries, you know, the jumper cable got put on that Georgia offense when Gunnar got into the lineup. And I think the only thing that'll keep them from being in the national championship game is, you know, maybe Gunnar not playing very well at the quarterback spot, because they don't have a lot of weaknesses on that Bulldog team.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest weakness of all is the wide receivers consistently and always dropping passes since the beginning of the season. And so it's going to be curious to see how they do. And I think that perhaps the biggest thing that we're not looking at right now that we should be looking at is Carson Beck is still a solid pocket passer. He's good enough at improvising and he's mobile enough, but he's not super mobile. I think Gunnar Stockton brings more to the table. But perhaps the narrative that we're most overlooking is not that Gunnar Stockton's more blue collar or not that he has mobility. It's the fact that he has mobility and the ability to move the ball with his legs when they need to, because the receivers can't stop dropping the passes. It's not a testament to necessarily what Gunnar Stockton can do. I mean, Kirby Smart's even spoken to this. He doesn't have the in-game reps that he wishes that he had. But what he does have is the ability to go off script consistently and do a good job with it. And I think that makes that this is giving this smoke show that he's better than Carson Beck, which is not true. I think he's got a lot of potential. I think he can be a very legitimate SEC quarterback. But the reason why we think Gunnar Stockton is so good is he can move better than Carson Beck on a team where the receivers can't catch the ball. The wide receiver drop rate is one of the worst, if not the worst, in the FBS. And that is what making Gunnar Stockton look so good right now. And I think he has a lot of potential and all that those other things. But at the same time, I mean, he's not this hero to the point that he's injecting this life into Georgia that Carson Beck can't. It's because of that.
Do you think that maybe some of this was masked at Georgia, receiver-wise, because how good Brock Bowers is? Because what he did the last 2 years, he was a kind of tilt-the-field guy at Georgia. And now the Saints get to play him this coming Sunday. Brock, the one thing with him, he wasn't going to drop many passes. I mean, if it got close to him, he was going to make that play downfield for the Bulldogs. And so maybe because you went so much to Brock, it sort of masked maybe the non-development of the receiving core at Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey, those two are on track to make history this season in the NFL. So Georgia, I mean, has gone from Mount Olympus down to the dirt in terms of the receiving core. That's a very big thing. And I feel like people don't realize the gap in which that they were last year and where they are now. And that's a very big deal. So I think Oscar Delp at Georgia has probably come the closest possible to replacing Brock Bowers, but he's still nowhere close. But I think looking back on him, he's about the only consistent pass catcher that there is on this team. Lawson Lucky's done a pretty good job, but not consistently. But, I mean, I put it between Lucky and Delp at this point as the best pass catchers that Georgia has, and everybody else is very hit or miss. Arian Smith has had some big plays, but he's also – him and Dominic Lovett have been two of the biggest criminals of dropping the pass. So I think it's a lot worse than people think it is.
So going up against Notre Dame, if I'm Notre Dame, I try to play man coverage and then try to get a little extra pressure on Gunner. Because if the receiving core is going to be, you know, 50-50 on a catch, I'm going to put all the pressure on Gunner at that point. Because when you look at how the games are broke down with them, my thing would be, okay, you're not going to beat me with the receivers, but also you're not going to beat me with your running game. I'm going to try to take that part away from Georgia if I'm Notre Dame. I don't know if Notre Dame can do it, but I think that would be the game plan going into this game.
Yeah, I think this all comes down to how well do you parallel against Trevor Etienne. And I promise you that's a lot harder than you think it is, even if it's a singular person. Trevor Etienne has been a very big force within this game for Georgia. So I think between Etienne, how well Etienne's contained, how well Arian Smith, and at times he does, hit his hot streak. So Arian Smith, which version are we getting of him? Trevor Etienne, can you stop him? Gunner Stockton, can you stop him on the ground? I think it comes down to those three things. And I think another thing that we haven't spoken about yet so far, Riley Leonard caught a lot of flack at the beginning of this season for his play at Notre Dame, but I think he's done a very good job as of late. I think he did a very good job whenever he wasn't injured at Duke. So I think that offensive side of the ball and what he's able to engineer there and what the Georgia secondary can do against him. And I mean, he's also very, very tall, very big quarterback, but still a very large running threat as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how things match up with those.
Going from Georgia, Chrissy, over to the Atlanta Falcons. Just curious, your analysis of Michael Penix's first start in the NFL. What'd you think?
Yeah, I did not like Michael Penix Jr. at all in the pre-draft process whatsoever. I think his mechanics are still quite horrible. But at the same time, I mean, I asked Raheem Morris about this. I'm not shy about it. I talked to Michael Penix Jr. that all people involved are aware that I am not a fan of Michael Penix Jr.'s mechanics, and I think that nobody really is. But they found, from what I've been told, ways to work around them. He's found ways to be accurate. I mean, I think he did a very good job with some well-placed balls, some good timing. I mean, he played a good game as a rookie. Couldn't have asked much of anything more from him. It's not my way of playing quarterback. It's not my way of playing football. But it sounds like they're correcting his mechanics and finding ways to work around them for the meantime. And he's clearly, look at that final score and what they were able to do on offense, he's getting the job done for now. We'll see how that continues to progress. But I think a good job by him on the first part, this first start here, I think it was respectable the way that he handles himself as a young person. The things he described to me in his relationship with Kirk Cousins, the mutual respect there is there, and kind of the passing the torch for now, the way that things look right now. I think it was positive, but I mean, I'm going to continue to kind of look at how this goes from the short remainder of the season. And then if, and when the Falcons do make their postseason berth.
Chrissy, one of the things we saw Jaden the last 2 years at LSU, and I think Cliff Kingsbury, I got to give him a lot of credit. There's still some work there with Jaden and certain things he does, but he plays to Jaden's strength as a football player, and he understands the type of throws that Jaden really likes to go downfield with, and certainly he can buy all kind of time with those legs, the way he can run with the football. There's a certain confidence in him. I think what Kingsbury has done is really sort of been overlooked. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Jaden. I'm a huge Jaden Daniels fan. But I think the way Cliff has used him in year one, you really couldn't ask him to build it better for Jaden than how he's done so far this year.
Yeah, that's the product of a quarterback playing in an air raid system under an air raid coach. That's exactly what's going on there.
Jaden Daniels is the biggest issue. And I was I was not big on Jaden Daniels his first half a year at LSU. I was huge on Jaden Daniels first his time at Arizona State, I mean. But the biggest issue was that Jaden Daniels could not consistently score through the air. We didn't know if that was because of the game plan. We didn't know if it was because of him. We didn't know if it was lack of talent, whatever was going on. And I think that Jaden Daniels has been thrust into now two systems between the college system at LSU and the NFL system with the Washington Commanders, and they have refined him completely as a passer. That's the only thing I wanted to see from him whenever I was promoting him as a top 10 quarterback when nobody else was. Nobody else was doing that when he was at Arizona State with the Sun Devils. And I think that over time, you have a quarterback who's not polished as a passer. The dual threat quarterback, the true, I'm not talking about Lamar Jackson before he was taught how to throw the ball for the first time, which a lot of people don't want to talk about, but it's true. A true dual threat passer is the most dangerous thing at any position in the NFL. And I think that Jaden Daniels has happened into two situations where he has been groomed and polished as a great dual threat quarterback. And so I think that's what's going on there. And I think that Cliff Kingsbury, as someone who was mentored under Mike Leach, who was an air raid offense guru, is exactly what factored into that.
Chrissy, appreciate your time and knowledge. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Chrissy.
Absolutely. Thank you. Bye-bye.
College football and NFL writer for USA Today Sports Media Group, Chrissy Freud, joined us there, breaking it all down. We're going to take a break, and when we get back, we'll get into our pick six segment and make our selections for this weekend. Oof, after this past week, though, I don't know if you want mine. It's been rough all year, but especially this weekend. I fell flat in college. We'll get into it more, though, when we get after the break right here on WWL. Stay tuned. Back here at the Treasure Chest Casino as Sports Talk rolls on and time to place y'all bets. We get into our pick six segment that gets expanded again this weekend. Although I don't know, like I said, going into the break, if you're taking any of my picks. Charlie, how did everybody fare after this weekend of games?
Pretty well, actually. I went 7-1. Mike and Bobby both went 5-3. Steve, you went 3-5. As you mentioned, had a really tough week in college, you know. Just playing the favorites in college seemed to really work for me in that first round, guys. And the one thing that really messed all of us up, the Buccaneers on that primetime game against the Cowboys. We all took the
Bucs. Catch the damn ball instead of letting the interception go.
Yeah, you know how it is. So resetting everything right now, guys. We're actually through 100 games, by the way, in pick six, woo-hoo! Which is very fun. I'm 57-43. Mike, you're at 50-50. Steve, you're at 48-52. And Bobby's at 46-54. Mm-hmm. So, similar to what we did last week, we have all four college football playoff games. We'll also pick a local team. We got LSU versus Baylor in the Texas Bowl. We'll start with that in just a second here. And then we got three NFL games as well. So, starting in Houston, LSU versus Baylor. Baylor 1.5-point favorites on New Year's Eve in the Texas Bowl.
I'm going to go with the Baylor Bears in this one. Give me the revenge of Dave Aranda in the matchup. I just think the LSU Tigers don't really have much to play for in this, where I think Baylor wants to show them something.
I'll go with Baylor. I think their offense has really been good. Tully, you and I have talked about it. Man, those last five or six games of the year, man, they trolled up some offensive yardage and put points on the board. The one thing both of them have in common, they're both not real good on defense. So maybe the play is maybe the over, but I think that might be 59. So that's sort of high. But I'm going to go with Baylor here. I just think losing your two starting tackles is, man, that really sort of hurts LSU not to have Emory and Campbell up front.
Yeah, I'm with y'all. Bobby's got LSU, but I'm with Baylor on this play because if you're looking at it, guys, it's going to be one of those, you know, as you mentioned, Mike, you got to outscore the opponent just because Baylor's offense has been humming for the last 6 weeks. And I just don't know if LSU can do it with some players that aren't going to be playing in this matchup. Obviously, Mason Taylor, the two tackles, Kyron Lacy, all going to the NFL. So moving on, guys, we got the college football playoff, the quarterfinals. 6-seeded Penn State will kick us off on New Year's Eve versus 3-seeded Boise State in Glendale, Arizona for the Fiesta Bowl.
Whew, this is tough. How much
I didn't give you the number. Penn State, 10.5-point favorites versus Boise.
Yeah, I was going to say, that how much are they favored by here?
I'm going Penn State. I just think they're the better team, and I think they're going to show you how good they are. I'm going with the Nittany Lions.
Yeah, as much as, you know, we keep waiting for, you know, them to fall, I still think, yeah, they're clearly the better team in this matchup. And it is a big number, but I still think they can cover this against Boise State. My son's not going to be happy with me.
Wait a minute. It was a big number against SMU. What happened there?
No, exactly. My son won't be happy to me. He's a big Genty fan, but I'm going to go with the Nittany Lions, too, in this matchup. I'll give the points.
Bobby and I disagree.
Okay.
I'm going Boise. Bobby's going Boise. 10.5 is too much. I think it's if Penn State wins, it's going to be a touchdown type of game. I don't think it's going to be a double-digit type of game. And even if it is, if it's like a 10-point spread, I still got the half point there. Give me Boise to keep this at least close, guys. I just remember how tight that they played Oregon earlier in the season. And Penn State, James Franklin effect. We'll see what happens here, guys, in Glendale,
right.
Arizona. New Year's Day, we got the Peach Bowl. Number 5, Texas. 13.5-point favors versus number 4, Arizona State in Atlanta.
Sorry, Arizona State. I'm going Tejas. Give me them. I think it's going to be a massacre in this one, so I don't have a problem laying that many points.
I'm going Texas, too.
Clean sweep, because Bobby's also got Texas, and I got Texas as well. We'll see if they...
You know what that means.
That
no,
means
absolutely.
Arizona State's going to cover.
Right, play Arizona State plus 13.5. Now, the half point helps here, guys. If it was 14.5, I'd think potentially playing Arizona State, but I agree with what Chrissy was saying earlier. That this just kind of feels like a blowout here.
Yeah, exactly.
And Texas making it to the semifinals. Up next, we got the Rose Bowl. Number 8, Ohio State, the premier matchup of the weekend. 2.5-point favorites versus number 1, Oregon in Pasadena.
I'm going to go Ohio State. I just think if they focused, man, Oregon, I thought in the first game, got a lot of breaks go their way, and Ohio State helped them. Today, you know what? Man, I'm a big Dan Lanning fan. I think the world of him as a coach. I think they're a very good football team, but I think Ohio State may have hit stride. I'm going to go with the Buckeyes.
Give me the quack attack. I'm going Oregon Ducks here, given getting the 2.5 in this matchup. So I think they'll be able to advance. I've got them actually in the national championship, the final game. So give me the Ducks. Quack, quack.
Ohio State treated me very well last weekend, guys, in that gigantic victory over Tennessee. I'm going with the Buckeyes here as well. Specifically that first quarter that they played against Tennessee, they looked like an unstoppable freight train. And if you get like one of those quarters against Oregon, that could be enough in a very close game. 2.5 points, give me the Buckeyes. Moving on, we got the Sugar Bowl, number 7, Notre Dame versus number 2, Georgia. The Bulldogs, 1.5-point favorites over the Fighting Irish in New Orleans.
Yeah, this is almost like a pick-em.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly what I was saying too.
You know what? I'm going to go with Georgia. I think defensively, I think Riley's going to get sort of squashed here. And I think Georgia can run the football. And so I'm going to go with the Bulldogs.
I'm with the Bulldogs, too. Give me Georgia in the matchup over Notre Dame. Although, I've mentioned this before, like Hebert, never picking the Cowboys. I'm never picking the Irish. So, go Dogs.
You got prejudice.
this is bad, boys, because Bobby and I both have the Bulldogs as well. This is one of those games I'm not betting against Kirby Smart. I mean, I know that they're playing with a backup quarterback here. I know Notre Dame looked really good against Indiana. Give me the Bulldogs minus 1.5 here, guys. And this is a clean sweep. All 4 of us have the Bulldogs in New Orleans in the Sugar Bowl. NFL Week 17, guys, starting off with the Raiders 1.5-point favorites at the Saints.
I'm going to go with the Saints in this matchup. If they can't beat the pitiful Raiders, that's not going to be good news. Obviously, they were mismatched all the way around against the Packers. I think they should be a lot better suited to take on a team at home. And being, you know, a underdog in the Superdome will probably motivate this bunch a little bit extra, having everybody counting them out. So give me the black and gold in this matchup. Getting points at home.
Raiders.
Oh, yeah,
if Derek Carr was playing in this game, I would feel differently. But it doesn't look that way. I'm going to go Raiders.
I hate to say it, but I agree with Mike. Bobby's got the Saints, obviously, as well.
Naturally.
I can't pick the Saints right now, boys. Like, I saw the original spread. I'm like, how are the Raiders favored? And then you see what the Saints
do. You understand why.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm leaning basically from what Coach Rizzi had said, that Carr's not likely to play this week. You're going to probably see Rattler. So, yeah.
Definitely worried about Brock Bowers, too.
Yeah, exactly.
They ain't covered a tight end in 20 years.
Right.
This one ain't going to be good.
Up next, guys, we got the premier matchup of the weekend in the NFL. The Packers at the Vikings, an NFC North showdown. Green Bay, 1.5-point favorites on the road in Minnesota.
Ooh-wee.
Bobby's got the Vikings starting it off.
That is spicy. I mean, the way we saw the Packers play this past Monday night, I'm going to roll with them even on the road, though. I just think that they really are a complete squad right now and just look so darn tough to beat. So good luck to Sam Darnold and co, but give me the Pack.
I want the Packers, too. I'm going that way.
With both of you. So Bobby's standing alone with the Vikings here. The Vikings won this game earlier. Give me some Packers revenge here on the road in Minnesota this weekend. Up next, guys, we got the Falcons at the Commanders on Sunday Night Football. Michael Penix versus Jaden Daniels, Washington, 4.5-point favorites at home.
Man, come on, Jaden.
Yeah.
I'm going Commanders here. Come on, Jaden. Take care of business against the Falcons.
Yeah, if I'm just going to go two based on who's the quarterbacks for each team, Michael Penix versus Jaden Daniels, I'm going to ride with that kid. So give me the Commanders giving 4.5.
Clean sweep, which means the Falcons are going to win this game.
Ruh-roh.
So that's it.
Well, that's a wrap on our Pick 8 segment. We'll find out how we do after the new year, gents.
Hopefully it's better than this year.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, couldn't be any worse, could it?
Well, I'm trying to give us some extra games here, guys. I've got to get these records better.
Well, thanks for breaking it all down for us, Charlie. We're going to take a break right now. We'll get back with more sports talk from the Treasure Chest Casino right after this. Stay tuned as we head to the sports book to make our picks. We'll be right back after this. Closing out this hour of Sports Talk, we'll be back with more breaking down Saints versus Rays. So stay tuned right after the news break on WWL. What's going on, sports fans? We're here at the Treasure Chest Casino and the Game Bar and Grill as we do our sports broadcast until 7 p.m. when Thursday Night Football takes over. 6:30 over on 870 a.m. will begin pregame coverage of the Pelicans taking on the Houston Rockets, a 7 o'clock tip-off on 870 a.m. The Pelicans putting out there, too, just moments ago that Devontae Green with right knee soreness and Trey Murphy due to with a left ankle sprain are available for tonight's game against the Rockets.
Well, that's
so
good news.
Any kind of firepower is needed.
They need all they can get against the Rockets.
We are going to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line right now where we got Hondo Carpenter on the line who covers the Las Vegas Raiders for Sports Illustrated. Always appreciate your time, Hondo. Hope you had a great Christmas. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry, but I don't know what happened, but I am looking forward to being down in New Orleans this weekend with my family and enjoying some Louisiana weather.
Appreciate you,
man. Listen, it's sort of hot and cool here, Hondo, but I told Steve, hey, Raiders week, we got to get Hondo on. You're one of our top guests, man. We'd love to have you on because you tell it like it is, and we enjoy that about you. One of the things in watching the Raiders this year, and you can see there's areas where they need talent, but they play hard for Antonio Pierce. And I give them credit because when you get one loss after another, a lot of times that destroys the psyche of a team. But the one thing I'll give Las Vegas, man, they play hard for Pierce. And you can see that they don't have all the pieces in place, certainly, and you don't have the star quarterback. But, man, when you give all you got, you're going to win a few games in this league.
Well, I can tell you a couple of things. First of all, they're down 15 starters that are out. And think about that, gentlemen. Show me a team in the NFL that would lose 15 starters that didn't have a franchise quarterback that would, you know, be much better than 3-12, number one. Second of all, I would tell you, and I think this is a big one, is they absolutely love Antonio Pierce. They believe in him. They fight for him. They scrap for him. You know, the Raiders right now are playing 14 guys in their first or second year. That bodes extremely well for the future of this franchise. There is a lot of positives on this team, a lot of really good talent on this team, just not having a franchise quarterback. I mean, think about this one. Christian Wilkins, which you can make an argument as either 1A or 1B, best defensive tackle in the league, out for the season. Malcolm Kuntz, a rising superstar, never got to play it down this year when he was absolutely tremendous last year. Max Crosby hurt the entire year. He's out. Then you can go through and you just keep adding injury. Marcus Epps, who is the quarterback of the defense, out for the entire year. You can literally, Ja'Corian Bennett, out for the entire year. Nate Hobbs has been out. The other starting corner. I mean, you can just go through and you just keep naming them and naming them and naming them. And all of a sudden it begins to hit you. This is a team with a lot of talent that fights, it scraps. They're going to be better because so many of their rookies are playing next year. But the reality is they're not a good football team right now. But they're a team that's absolutely fought twice. They played the Chiefs and should have beat them, one of them. The other one, they were right in it to the end. They should not have beaten them, but it was a absolute atrocious call, which everybody in the league has seen multiple times for the Chiefs this year. This is a team that's coming down to Louisiana, and they're not looking for a vacation. They want to smack somebody in the face. They're angry. They're mad. They play that way. They play incredibly tough, very, very physical. They are not even close to the most talented team that the Saints have played, but they're going to make the Saints play them for four quarters. And if the Saints don't, they're going to lose. And that's the mentality of this team. They're not good, and I'm not pretending it, but I've seen a lot of teams that weren't good win games when they just fight, scratch, and claw. I told someone this. They are the Rocky Balboa of the NFL, except not winning at that level, because they're going to make them go the entire fight. And it's going to be every play, every down, and rookies are going to make rookie mistakes. Young players are going to make young player mistakes. But they love Antonio Pierce. He's not lost this locker room. It's not even close. And anyone that steps back and looks objectively, think about this, gentlemen. Take away 15 starters from the Saints. What would their record be? Now, I know you guys are injured. I'm not saying you're not. But imagine if it was 15. And that's where the Raiders are right now. But they're coming in there fighting, scratching, clawing, and they're excited to be there.
Hondo, I got a guy sent me a text, and this was over the weekend. And he said, I don't know if you remember me or not, but right before the draft, I asked you, give me two guys that you would put all your money on that will make it in the NFL out of this draft class. And I do remember him asking me that. I said, Jaden Daniels from LSU, Brock Bowers from Georgia. Brock, it was such a good football player on a team that wasn't noted really for throwing the football a lot, but their passing game was really sort of built over the last 2 years at Georgia to get the football to Brock, because he was an unbelievable talent catching the football. And you see in year one, you know, that now he has more catches than any other rookie tight end in the history of the National Football League. And he surpassed Sam Laporta, who had that basically honor a year ago with the Lions. Brock has just been a great guy. But in getting to know him a little bit, he is so humble. He's a guy who doesn't want any spotlight thrown on him at all. He would rather you go talk to anybody else but him. But he is really a superstar player in the National Football League in year one.
I can tell you this. I've done this for 30 years, and there is a term that NFL teams use called dude. And a dude is a guy that when they're coming out in the draft that they say, this is a can't miss. Now, I've only seen one draft where the consensus in the NFL was that there were no dudes. And I've seen as high as 8 1 year. But last year, there were three guys considered dudes: Joe Alt, Brock Bowers, and Talise Fuaga. There were other guys that people thought, man, they're pretty good and they could be really good superstars, but this has to happen or that has to happen. So, for example, with Jaden, you know, he's small. And so he had to change his aggressive style running to stay in the pocket a little bit better. And to his credit, he's made that adjustment. Everyone thought, man, he could be super special, but that's hard for some guys to do. But there were three dudes. And so when the Raiders got to their pick, they, in all of their, and this is literally what I was told, in thousands of mock drafts, because they mock everything, because they want to know who they're going to pick the moment, no matter how it happens, they never had one where Brock Bowers got to them. There was never one. And so when people, they had multiple teams, including the Rams, trying to get up to get Bowers, and people said, well, you know, but the trade shark said they should have made it. No, because they saw Brock Bowers as a number one overall pick. And so if you want that pick from them, you were going to have to trade with them as if it was a number one, and no one was willing to go that high because they believed he was. That's where Tom Telesco and the previous GM, Dave Ziegler, who's, you know, worked with you guys this year, who did a tremendous job with the Raiders. This is where, you know, their approach of taking the best player available, staying put, waiting. You know, they weren't going to get Jaden to come there, even though Jaden had been in the locker room, wanted to be a Raider. Because of his relationship with Antonio Pierce, it wasn't going to happen. So they didn't panic. They didn't go overpick a guy. And all of a sudden, you know, they get a Brock Bowers. So this team is better. Think about this one. One of the best wide receivers in PFF has him as the highest catch percentage in the NFL is Jacoby Myers. And I've been reporting all offseason, Jacoby was the best offensive player in this team, and that was when Devontae was here. Then you add Brock Bowers. Then you come through with an offensive line with either with two rookies that are playing unbelievable in Delmar DJ Glaze and Jackson Powers Johnson, and then Jordan Meredith, who probably isn't going to play on Sunday, who's a sophomore player who's played extremely well. Then you got Michael Mayer, last year's number one tight end, to go with Brock Bowers. There's a ton of talent on this team. Zamir White last year, when Antonio Pierce took over, was the number one running back in the NFL, and he's out for the year. So there is a lot of talent here. They are a quarterback away from being an absolutely competitive team to compete to get in the playoffs, not to win a championship. And they're not in need of a rebuild. They do, however, have to reload at some certain positions. But you're absolutely right. Brock Bowers is a kid. Let me tell you about this kid's character. He lives in Vegas. His girlfriend is in Tennessee. And he lives basically at the facility. He's always there. He watches film like a vet. I was talking to him in the locker room the other day about the rookie wall. And there's a lot of rookies playing for the Raiders, and they're all talking about the rookie wall. And I asked him, you know, have you hit it? And he goes, no, I haven't hit it. You know, he comes from Georgia, where they're used to playing a lot more than 12 games. And the kid keeps himself in superior shape. He's never out in the town, literally never out in the town. He is at the facility or at his house. And he's all football. This is a kid, take away his football talent. This is the kid every dad wants their daughter to marry. Hardworking, blue collar, just absolutely loves the game. His teammates adore him. They don't like Brock. They love him. He's got the respect. He came in from day one acting like a vet. I'll tell you a great story when I knew he was going to be special. I was asked the other day, when did you know? And I'll tell you a funny story. So right after the draft last year, in my prediction article, I predicted that this is the draft in 23. I predicted they were going to take Brock. I knew the Raiders loved him. I predicted it a year in advance. Obviously, there was a lot of changes, it made me look smarter than I am. But he was in his first mini camp. And he leans over to the one of the veterans and is moving them and putting them in the right spot. And it was a veteran wide receiver. So here he is as a rook who knew the playbook so well, he's moving guys around. He's a guy that's walking off the field, and if he sees a piece of tape that somebody threw on the field, he picks it up and puts it in the trash can. I've met his parents once, tremendous people. They raised a great kid who happens to be a great football player. And he is everything that's advertised, and he's on the fast track trajectory for a gold jacket.
No question about it. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I've asked this before to other people. Now with Tom Brady coming in as sort of the minority owner, how much impact will he have in the future here with the Raiders? I know one thing, when Al was running the show, he didn't take no advice from anybody. Al was going to do it his way, and that was going to be it. The differences between Mark, the son, and Al, and how much impact will Brady have? I would think he's probably going to be in the air about the next quarterback there, but how much influence you think Tom Brady will have on this organization moving forward?
Well, I broke the story a year ago when a source inside the building told me that he was going to have a massive voice. And then at the owners meeting in Las Colinas, Texas, at the Ritz-Carlton a couple weeks ago, Mark Davis confirmed that by calling it a huge voice in the organization. I believe, now what I'm about to give is opinion, not reporting as factual. I believe Tom Brady will probably go 5 seasons with Fox and then probably move to Vegas and run the Raiders. He's going to have a massive voice. He's going to have a huge voice. I don't expect him to be there to run day-to-day operations again until probably after 5 years with Fox. That's just my guess, my opinion, feeling, and reading some tea leaves. But he's going to have a very big voice. But remember this, the only voice he's going to have is what Mark Davis allows him to have. Mark respects him. And I'm going to say something to you, and I want to make it very clear, because I have a lot of respect for Al Davis. And Al did a ton of things right. But Al Davis wasn't 5% of the businessman that his son is. It's not even close. Al was not a good businessman, in my opinion. Mark Davis is a savant. Mark, but Al Davis didn't do what, in my opinion, fathers are supposed to do. He didn't groom Mark on how to run the franchise. And so Mark was not the best owner in the NFL when he first took over. And I'm not saying anything that I don't think Mark's not heard me say before. But one thing that that man has done, and I give him a world of credit, is he has emerged from trying to learn literally by drinking out of a fire hose. And he has learned and he's adapted and he is incredibly honest. He's one of the most genuine human beings you'll ever meet. He will tell you where he messes up. He'll tell you, I don't know this. I don't know that. I don't know how many billionaires you've talked to. I've had the privilege of talking to several in my life. He is the most humble billionaire you've ever met. You would never know he was a billionaire. You would never know it. And he's a guy that flies on Southwest Airlines. He's a guy that, you know, he doesn't wear the Rolexes. He's always dressed in Raider gear. He just looks like a Raider fan. He hangs out with the Raiders, the fans. He's one of the people. He loves them. He's not embarrassed of them. He appreciates them. And I have never had a dealing with him that's been anything less than completely genuine. And so he comes in and he understands what he doesn't know. And he's tried to put football people in there. He's paying tens of millions of dollars to guys that didn't work out, that he fired. And so he's willing to spend any amount of money. It is by far the best practice facility in the NFL. And I've been to all of them. It's the nicest stadium, and it's not even close. And you ask people in the national media, and they'll tell you Allegiant's unbelievable. And so he has built everything for a winner. They're flushed in cash. They can pay anybody anything that they want. They can structure the deal any way. And he's now looking for that final piece. And he finds a guy in Tom Brady who's a complete winner. Now, we don't know. Is he going to be Michael Jordan? He might be, but we don't know. Or is he going to end up being the greatest player who becomes an owner and winner in history? Looking at Tom Brady's track record, I think that you would absolutely have to say the chances are better that he becomes the best owner of any former player, because what has he done and failed at? And so, again, he is absolutely willing to listen. He's going to give Tom Brady a voice. But I'm also going to tell you this. Giving Tom Brady a voice doesn't mean he now becomes a slappy for Tom Brady. Tom Brady's going to have to convince him why it's a good idea. Now, Tom Brady's going to have a lot easier time doing that than I would, because Tom Brady's resume is a heck of a lot better than mine in football, and he should have an easier time. But he's still going to have to convince Mark Davis. And this is a guy that'll spend any amount of money. You will never again hear the Raiders making a decision based on money. He is wallowing in it, and he just wants to win. It's the only thing in his life. It is the central focus of his life, which is to win. And I think that's admirable. Who doesn't want an owner like that?
Hondo, appreciate you sharing all that Raiders knowledge with us. Hopefully we see you in the Dome on Sunday. Have a good one, man. Thank you.
Thank you, Hondo.
I'll be there. Come say hi to me in the press box, guys.
We'll do it.
Hondo Carpenter covering the Las Vegas Raiders for Sports Illustrated. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll talk to our sideline reporter, Jeff Nowak, also WWL's digital content producer, about today's practice and who we can expect to be playing Sunday against the Silver and Black. Taking a break right here at the Treasure Chest Casino, doing Sports Talk till 7. Come join us. We'll be hanging out. Come right back after this on WWL, so stay tuned. Welcome back into Sports Talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino. We're going to continue breaking down the matchup Sunday, Week 17, the Saints hosting the Raiders. Welcoming in now WWL sideline reporter Jeff Nowak, also digital content producer. Jeff, how you doing today? How was your Christmas in Green Bay?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. It's warmer. You know, I've been walking around in a T-shirt all day, being like, man, why is it so warm? And I'm like, it's because I'm programmed for 25 degrees. So now I have this. That's like the trick to feeling like Louisiana is warmer than it is, to go up to Green Bay for a week and then come back here. You will never feel warmer.
Jeff, you there, was it as dominating a performance, are you looking at it, as what we saw on television? Because it looked to me, no matter what the Packers did, it was going to work for them. everything worked. They were a dominant football team in the trenches. You certainly saw the big advantage they have at quarterback, Josh Jacobs. Everything is advertised. But to me, what jumped out is how good their defense has come along throughout the year. They had some pieces. They were moving around. And to have a guy, I scouted him in high school, Edgen Cooper in Covington. He's not even started. And look the numbers this guy's put up. And he's twice been the NFC Defensive Player of the Week. That looks to me to be a football team. If they can stay healthy, they got a legitimate shot to be in New Orleans on Super Bowl Sunday.
It's a very good football team. I do think that the Saints offense did them a solid by just being completely inept. And by that, I mean, like, every time it felt like the Saints were doing something well, they, you know, turned it over. They fumbled. They threw an interception. They just dropped passes. I think Jordan Mims had a couple drops. It was like, what are you doing? Kevin Austin had a drop at one point on a ball that he should have had. So, I mean, I think the defense played really well, and it's a good defense. But, you know, the Saints did them, you know, that shouldn't have been a shutout. The Saints should have been able to put up some points, should have been able to keep it more competitive. And they just weren't able to. I was actually more impressed with the offense, if I'm being honest, because the way they play really is going to translate well to a playoff environment. If they end up in a cold weather game and you can just lean on some people with Josh Jacobs, because the way they extend drives and are able to just dominate the time of possession. I mean, the Saints offense, they were barely on the field in the first half. And that the drive that when it happened, I was like, all right, we might as well just pack up and go home now, was their second possession. They got it at their own 6-yard line. They proceeded to go 94 yards in 17 plays and never really felt like they were in danger of giving up possession. You know, and that's a really impressive team. And, you know, the Saints just played one of their worst games of the year on both sides of the ball. You know, Darren Rizzi will say, hey, we looked at it. We didn't see anyone playing with a lack of effort. And I agree to some extent. But I feel like that was an example of a game where you lost it before you ever stepped foot on the field. I just don't feel like they were ready. I don't feel like they felt like they were going to go win that game once it started. So it was ugly for the Saints. I think they made the Packers look like the best team in the NFL. And that's my biggest issue, is they're not the best team in the NFL. This is a wild card team that is very good, but you should be a lot closer to that team than you were on Monday. And that's the most disappointing thing to me from that performance for the Saints, is it kind of just showed just how far away you are from the level of that the Packers are right now. And that's not a good look for the Saints.
To think about the NFC North, and Steve and I, Bob and I have talked about it too, to have three teams that may end up with 12 games or more wins,
yeah,
in one spot. And, you know, the Bears, I think a lot of people maybe thought in the offseason they could be in the mix too, but that didn't turn out too good. But to see how well Minnesota has played, the Lions have played well, but boy, you worry now with all those injuries just mounting up one after the other, that it kind of cracks that door. And listen, I'm right next to Geller. And, you know, I know he loves the Eagles. But, man, do you trust Sirianni in a big game?
Oh, absolutely,
man,
not.
He's like a loose cannon out there. I've heard LaFleur talk about the type of offense he wants. And he is about running the ball and then playing off of that play action stuff. And I think now he's found the guy to take over that offense of being the bell cow, and that being Josh Jacobs. Nothing against Aaron Jones. I think he's a good football player. I think Josh Jacobs is one of the elite running backs in this league.
And yeah, and the thing with Josh is he's not a one-trick pony, right? Like, you put him on the field, you can do anything. And I think that was the issue with the deployment, the platoon of Aaron Jones and I'm blanking on the other guy's name, J.J. Dillon. You know, you just had two guys who you kind of knew what their game was when they got on the field. Like, okay, this is their pound the rock guy. This is their, okay, you know, throw the ball, do that kind of two-minute drill stuff. And with Josh, you kind of just, I don't know what they're going to do. Right? They can throw him out of the backfield. He can make guys miss in space. He can just bash you over the head. So that's a good team. And, you know, I'm disappointed that the Lions haven't gotten to this point with the roster that they should have right now, because that was as dominant of a team throughout the season as I've seen in a long time. Now they're kind of, hey, let's see if we can outscore you. You know, you're putting up 40 points and losing in a game. You know, that's not something you want to see. But that's a fun division. It's a much more fun division to watch than the NFC South. But no, that's a great fan base. I was really impressed with the fan base throughout the game. You know, no one left. It's a 25 degree game. They're up by 30. It was a packed house with 5 minutes to go. I know Matt LaFleur would prefer if they didn't do the wave while the Packers were on offense. That's another discussion to have for another day. But no, that team is in really good shape. I was really impressed with Jordan Love. It's easy to forget this is his second year as a starter. Obviously, he's an older guy. He's been around a lot longer than that. But he just makes good decisions. Like, that was the biggest difference when you look at what he's doing versus what Spencer Rattler was doing is every time the Saints kind of won a play, right, every time they blew up what the Packers were trying to do, he either made something happen, escaped pressure, or just got the ball out, killed the play. You know, the Saints weren't able to get them behind the sticks because he's playing like a seasoned veteran, even though he's only in year two. And it's really impressive.
One of the things, too, Jeff, is if the Saints don't get a running game going against the Raiders, and they're not a very good team. And again, we had Hondo Carpenter on talking about all the injuries, 17 starters that they've lost throughout the year. But you can't be one-dimensional in this league. You can't. And their inability to run the football. They can't run the ball against the Raiders. You might see another big win by Las Vegas here because of the fact you become one-dimensional. You throw everything on the back of the young quarterback. And then now he feels he's got to make a play. Every time he's got the ball in his hands, it's not going to work that way. I think it's imperative. If they're going to win this game, they've got to be able to run the football. And now you're going to be without McCoy. You're going to be without Lucas Patrick. You got Lemieux, who's kind of a neophyte as far as the center position's concerned. He's played guard basically his entire career. And you're going to we'll go with Landon Young at the left guard position. Man, it puts it in a bad spot here. But I think if you go back to it, that lack of a running game really, really shows up, and it is showing up big today.
Yeah, no question. The only positive I can say is the Saints have had to go to a backup center so much this year that Shane Lemieux actually has some pretty good experience at this point. You know, I think this would be his third start, maybe fourth, but that's a big issue. And the problem is, like, when you're behind the way the Saints were and you're not sustaining any offense, they really had no choice. They had to throw the ball. That's why you saw Jordan Mims in there a majority of the second half, because they were in the two-minute offense basically the entire second half. And I think that was the plan you went into that game with, was Kendra Miller is going to take the early down work. Jordan Mims is going to be kind of your third down back, and Jamal Williams is going to slot in there where it makes sense. And you just were never able to get to that kind of early down offensive package. And I know it was a little frustrating for Kendra to be on the field a little bit more, but it just didn't work out that way. And I would have liked to see a little better of a performance from Jordan. I know he had like five catches, I think, in that game, but it should have been more. He had a couple opportunities he just put on the ground. No, he was probably disappointed with that effort because it was his first extended run in a Saints uniform, really. So, no, I think you'll be able to keep this game a lot closer. I don't think there'll be nearly as many points put up, at least on the opposing side. You know, the Raiders are coming off a win. They did beat the Jaguars last week. It was a low-scoring game. So I don't think this will be the type of game where you get out of your offense nearly as quickly as you did last week in Green Bay. But now, if it is Spencer Rattler out there, like, we don't know for sure yet. They're still holding out hope. Darren Rizzi said today, like, if Derek can get out there either Friday or Saturday to kind of game out how it would look with that fractured left hand, you know, whether can you take a snap under center? Do you have to be in the shotgun? You know, how is that going to look? There's still a chance he gets out there, and obviously there's a lot of motivation for Derek to get out there against his former team. It's going to happen yet, but I would bet money on Spencer starting. Like, if I had to put odds on it, I would lean towards Spencer, because it's just hard to imagine, you know, putting Derek out there in the condition that he's in without a practice in 2 weeks. But yeah, I think, you know, Kendra Miller would be Spencer Rattler's best friend. I thought as they started to establish some more offense in the second half, that's really what it was, is you were able to escape pressure, get ahead of the chains. And, you know, there was even one play that he just kind of flipped it out to Kendra Miller and he got close to a first down. Like, I think that needs to be Spencer's game plan. It's like, if it's there, it's there. If it's not, check down. Right. And, you know, when you don't get sacked 17 times in four starts by accident, that's not the offensive line. That's the quarterback. especially when you look at the same offensive line Derek Carr was playing with. He started 10 games, got sacked 8 times. So it's got to be on Spencer to avoid those negative plays. And it's just what he wasn't able to do in that game.
Jeff, thanks for stopping by, man. Talk to you soon on the Inside Black and Gold podcast.
Thank you, Jeff.
That was Jeff Nowak, our Saints sideline reporter. We'll take a break and wrap things up when we get back right after this on WWL. Listening to Sports Talk on the Odyssey app or 105.3 FM. Looking for the Pelicans game. Tune in to 870 AM. Pre-game coverage going on there leading up to that 7 o'clock tip-off. Meanwhile, after the break, we're going to wrap things up here on Sports Talk and then head into Thursday night football between the Bears, who are taking on... who tonight? Seattle Seahawks. Thank you. Taking a break. We'll be right back after this on WWL. As we close up shop here on Sports Talk at the Treasure Chest Casino, I want to thank all the staff here for all their kindness and help throughout the show. Mike, looking at some of the numbers from the NFL Netflix viewing on Christmas Day. Whoa, baby. 24.1 million for Chiefs Steelers and 24.3 million for Ravens Texans. Meanwhile, the highest rated NBA game, 7.7 million Lakers Warriors.
I guess LeBron didn't see the numbers.
No, he didn't get wind of that.
The one thing, you know, man, you got to give the NFL, man, they a slot machine that keeps every time you hit it, dude, they pay off. And it's unbelievable. And I think what's eventually going to happen with Netflix is they're going to associate themselves with the gambling industry, and they will be the major sponsors on Netflix, and that's going to be a continuous deal with Netflix and the NFL.
I can hear the casino right now.
That's all you hear in the background. The NFL is making money. Unbelievable. That's why you got a lot of people wanting to be owners in the NFL, even if they billionaires have made it somewhere else. They want to make it in this business.
For co-host Mike Dettillier, engineer Luke Augusta, and our studio engineer Charlie Long, thank you for joining us here on Sports Talk. We'll be back tomorrow with more Fans in the Pro. Deuce McAllister, Mike Haas, coming up next here on 105.3. It'll be Thursday Night Football. Hoot at, everybody. See you later.